Now let us understand the time of supply of goods under section 12 of CGST Act 2017. The liability to pay tax on goods shall arise at the time of supply. The time of supply of goods shall be earlier of the date of issue of invoice or the date on which the supplier receives the payment. So date of issue of invoice and the date on which the supplier receives are very important to determine the time of supply. And one needs to note the date of issue of invoice or the date on supply of supply can happen first in any sequence. The point over here is whichever is earlier would be considered as the time of supply. It need not only be date of issue of invoice or the date on which the supplier receives the payment with respect to the supply. So this provision has to be very clearly noted as far as the time of supply of goods is considered. The time of supply shall be the earliest of the date of receipt of goods. Now we are talking of a scenario where a tax is paid or liable to be paid on reverse charge basis, which means the recipient has to pay the tax. So the time of supply shall be the earliest of the date of receipt of goods or the date of payment as entered into the books of accounts of the recipient or the date on which the payment is debited in the bank account, whichever is earlier, or the date immediately following 30 days from the date of issue of invoice or any other document by whatever name called in lieu thereof by the supplier. So here also, based on different scenarios, where it's the receipt of goods, whether it is the payment entered into books of accounts, whether the amount is debited in the bank account, whether the goods are getting delayed, the point over here is whichever is earlier, that would be counted as the time of supply. Another point to be noted, especially when we want to compute a time of supply and taxes paid or liability to be paid on reverse charge basis, is where it is not possible to determine the time of supply under either clause A, clause B, or clause C, that is from the previous slide, the time of supply shall be date of entry in the books of accounts of the recipient of supply. So that is the ultimate. Now what happens when some vouchers are issued by the supplier? That voucher may specify the goods, or the voucher may have different goods which can be availed by the person who has the voucher. So the point over here is the goods are not specifically identified. Whichever goods are chosen by the voucher holder, that would be taken. So these are two different unique scenarios: voucher when the supply is identifiable, voucher when there is redemption required, and redemption will give an option of availing different types of products in that voucher. What will be the time of supply? In case where a periodical return has to be filed on the date on which such return is to be filed, this is with reference to the previous slide on the time of supply. As far as the voucher is concerned, we will consider in the next slides. Let us complete this slide first. Where it is not possible to determine the time of supply, the time of supply shall, in a case where a periodical return has to be filed, the date on which such return is to be filed, or in any other case, the date on which the tax is paid. So return filing and tax paying also becomes very important for determining when it is not possible to determine time of supply. What would be the time of supply when there is an addition in value? The addition in value can be for any reason, say by way of interest or by way of late fee, or by way of penalty for delayed payment. the time of supply to the extent it relates to the addition of value of supply by way of interest, late fee or penalty for delayed payment of any consideration shall be the date on which the supplier receives such addition in value. So the date on which the supplier receives such addition becomes very important for considering the time of supply when there is an addition in value. Now let us see another provision of time of supply of service, especially when there shall be an invoice issued by the supplier. The date of issue of invoice by the supplier, if the invoice is issued within the prescribed period under subsection 2 of section 31 or the date of receipt of payment, whichever is earlier. The date of provision of service. Now we are talking about time of supply in case of services. The date of provision of service, if the invoice is not issued within the period prescribed under subsection 2 of section 31 on the date of receipt of payments, whichever is earlier. The time of supply of services shall be earliest. This is point C from the previous slide. The date on which the recipient shows the receipt of service in his books of accounts in a case where the provision of clause A or B do not apply. That is the previous slide. So we have seen the time of supply, especially taxes paid or liable to be paid on reverse charge basis. It would be earlier of the date of payment as entered in the books of accounts of the recipient or the date on which the payment is debited in the bank account, whichever is earlier, or the date immediately following 60 days from the date of issue of invoice or any other document by whatever name called in lieu thereof by the supplier. One important point to be noted, where it is not possible to determine the time of supply under clause A or clause B as seen in the previous slide, the time of supply shall be the date of entry in the books of accounts of the recipient of supply. In case of supply by associated enterprises where the supplier of service is located outside India, the time of supply shall be the date of entry in the books of accounts of the recipient of supply or the date of payment, whichever is earlier. So this specific aspects of time of supply needs to be noted for computation of GST. Now, as we have seen in the previous slide, what happens in case of vouchers? We have seen two different scenarios in case of a voucher where the supply is identifiable, where the supply is not identifiable. Because when the supply is not identifiable, the owner of the voucher may have multiple options to have them on the basis of the voucher. So time of supply shall be the date of issue of voucher if the supply is identifiable, the date of redemption of the voucher in all other cases. What do you mean by redemption of voucher? The date on which the voucher has been encashed for the goods or service. Where it is not possible to determine the time of supply under provisions of subsection 2 or subsection 3 or subsection 4, the time of supply shall, in case where a periodical return has to be filed, be the date on which such return is to be filed, or in any other case, be the date on which the tax is paid. Similarly, whenever there is an addition in the value of supply, the time of supply to the extent it relates to an addition in the value of supply by way of interest, by way of late fee, by way of penalty for the delayed payment of any consideration shall be the date on which the supplier receives such addition in value. So the date on which the supplier receives addition in value would be considered as the time of supply. Now let us actually understand and compute the time of supply with the help of an example. As I read the example, note down the facts of the case. Here Mr. X supplied goods to Mr. Y on 28th of July 2021. The GST rate on the goods has changed from 12% to 5% after that, that is on the 1st of January 2022. Mr. X issued the invoice on 20th of August, that is after the supply of goods, and the payment is credited in the bank account much after that, that is 30th December. So there are various dates mentioned in the example. The point is, what is the time of supply in this case? The time of supply would be 28th of August 2021. What is time of supply? Why is time of supply 28th of August? Here, the goods are supplied on 28th of August. And what is the effective rate of GST? The GST rate would be 12% because the change has happened much later, that is in the January 2022. What would be the time of supply in this particular example? Reliable Industries, a ready-made garment manufacturer, issued the voucher on 10th of July 21 to their prospective customer for enabling them to buy redeemable garments manufactured by them from their shop. Customer purchased the ready-made garments on 20th of August. Now, this is specifically time of supply on the basis of voucher. The voucher has been issued on 10th of July for buying ready-made garments. Customer purchased the ready-made garments on 20th of August. Now, since here the goods are identifiable, the date of voucher, that is the 10th of July 21, would be the time of supply. Time of supply will be the issuance of voucher, since the voucher is identifiable with the goods. So this is a specific example when we talk in terms of a voucher. The time of supply will be either the date or date of the invoice or the date of redemption. If the goods are identifiable in the voucher, it would be the date of invoice. If the goods are not identifiable, it would be the date of redemption. Another example, let us see for finding the time of supply of goods. Shoppers Stop store, a large retailer who sells various types of products like the ready-made garment, jewelry, cosmetics, fabrics, etc. Now here there are multiple products actually sold, and a voucher has been issued on 10th of July to the prospective customer for enabling them to buy any product. So the customer has a choice to buy any product from different products, and basis on that the customer purchases ready-made garments on 20th of August. Now note here, the customer could have purchased either a ready-made garment or a jewelry or a cosmetic or a fabric or a shoe, etc., etc. However, he decided to purchase ready-made garment on 20th of August. Now, the time of supply in this case wouldn't be the date of voucher, because that voucher did not have a specific identifiable goods. The customer had a choice, and since the redemption of the voucher happened on 20th of August, the time of supply would be 20th of August. Time of supply will be the date of encashment of voucher, that is redemption of voucher. And since a voucher is not identifiable with any specific product, the time of supply would be the date of redemption. Now, let us look at the value of taxable supply under Section 15 of CGST Act 2017. Section 15 is very important for calculating the value of supply. The value of supply of goods or services or both shall be the transaction value, which is the price actually paid or payable for the said supply of goods or services or both, where the supplier and the recipient of supply are not related and the price is the sole consideration for the supply. So here also we had seen various inclusions, and from this point of view we can have a specific format for computation of transaction value. The base thing is the selling price. To the selling price we add inclusions which are not included in the sale price. From this total amount we then deduct the exclusions which are included in the sale, and once we deduct the exclusions from the selling price and inclusion, we get a transaction value before adding the profit margin. And whatever is the profit margin that is decided, once we add it to this computed amount, then we get the transaction value. So this is a standard format for computation of transaction value: selling price, add inclusions, less exclusions, add profit margin to get the transaction value after adding the profit margin. In your book, there are specific examples which actually helps you to compute a transaction value with large number of or many inclusions and exclusions, as well as a defined profit margin. So you can go through that. The value of supply shall not include any discount which is given before or at the time of supply and after the supply has been effected. When it comes to before or at the time of supply, if such discount has been fully recorded in the invoice issued in respect of such supply, and after the supply has been effected, if such discount is established in terms of an agreement entered into or before the time of such supply and specifically linked to the relevant invoice. Input tax rate is attributable to the discount on the basis of document issued by the supplier has been reversed by the recipient of supply. This slide we have already discussed before, specifically on the point of discounts which are to be excluded and not included in the value of supply. Who are persons that would be deemed to be related persons? Number one, such persons are officers or directors of one another's business. Such persons who are legally recognized partners in business. Such persons who are employers and employee. Any person directly or indirectly owns, controls or holds 25% or more of the outstanding voting stock or shares of both of them. There are some more who can be considered as related persons, like one of them directly or indirectly controlling the other. Both of them are directly or indirectly controlled by a third person. Together they are directly or indirectly controlling a third person, or they are members of the same family. So these examples of related persons has to be kept in mind. The term person also includes legal person, persons who are associated in the business of one another. In that, one is the sole agent or a sole distributor or sole concessioner, howsoever described, of the other shall be deemed to be related. So these examples of related persons are very useful when we actually apply the provisions of GST. Now let us have the computation of taxable value and tax liability. GST will be charged on the transaction value. This we have seen time and again. Transaction value is the price actually paid or payable for the supply of goods or services between unrelated parties. That is, the price is the sole consideration. We have also seen the format in which we compute the transaction value. Now we once again repeat what all is included in the value of supply under GST. The first comes any taxes, duties, cess, fees, charges levied under any act except the GST. The GST composition cess will be excluded if charged separately by the supplier. Second important point in competition is any amount that a supplier is liable to pay which has been incurred by the recipient and is not included in the price. Third important inclusion is the value will include all incidental expenses relation to such sale, such as packing, commission, etc. Subsidies linked to supply except government subsidies will be included. Interest, late fee, penalty for delayed payment of consideration will also be included. Now let us take a specific example to compute the taxability. Gupta Limited of Bengaluru supplies goods worth Rs. 10 lakhs to Hegde Limited of Mysuru. Both are from the state of Karnataka. The tax rate is, say, 12%. Location of the supplier, Bengaluru, state of Karnataka. Place of supply, Mysuru, again, state of Karnataka. The transaction is an intrastate since the supplier and the place of supply are within the same state. So what would be the tax liability on a supply with value worth Rs. 10 lakhs at the rate of 12%? CGST would be 6%, SGST would be 6%. We have seen 12% divided equally between CGST and SGST. So if the GST rate is 12%, equally divided 6% between CGST and SGST, 6% 10,60,000, SGST 6% of 10,60,000. So the total tax liability would be 60,000 plus 60,000, that is 1,20,000. Let us take another example of competition. Venkatesh Limited of Hyderabad supplies steels worth rupees 5 lakhs to Keshav Limited of Puducherry. Once again, two different states. Tax rate is assumed at 12%. Location of supplier Hyderabad, that is state of Telangana. Place of supply Puducherry, which is a union territory. Transaction interstate, since supplier and place of supply is in different state, IGST will be levable. If the IGST rate is 12%, 12% of 5 lakhs would be 60,000. So the total tax liability in this particular interstate supply would be rupees 60,000. Now friends, we have understood various provisions related to GST in this unit, but there are certain accounting requirements also, like maintaining of accounts and old or other records. Every registered person shall keep and maintain at his principal place of business, as mentioned in the certificate of registration, a true and correct account of production or manufacture of goods, inward and outward supply of goods or services of both, stock of goods, input tax credit availed, output tax payable and paid. So these are certain requirements which needs to be kept at the place of business. Where more than place of business is specified in the certificate of registration, the accounts relating to each place of business shall be kept at such place of business. A registered person may keep and maintain such accounts and other particulars in electronic form in such manner as we prescribe. So this enables the registered person to keep the accounts in a digitized form. Now let us look at the input tax credit provisions under GST and the conditions to claim. A registered person will be eligible to claim the input tax credit on fulfillment of certain conditions, such as number one, possession of a tax invoice or a debit note or a document evidencing payment. Number two, receipt of goods and or services. So both tax invoice and receipt of goods or services are important provisions. Number three, goods delivered by a supplier to other person on the direction of a registered person against a document of transfer of title to goods. Because sometimes it may be required to supply the goods to someone other than the registered person, but the directions of the registered person would be required for doing such delivery and furnishing of returns. So every transactions is to be followed by furnishing of returns. Where the goods are received in lots or installments, ITC will be allowed to be availed when the last lot or installment is received. Failure to the supplier towards supply of goods and or services within 180 days from the date of invoice, ITC already claimed, will be added to the output tax liability and interest to be paid on such tax. So there cannot be any failure on the, by the supplier. On payment to supplier, ITC will again be allowed to be claimed. No ITC will be allowed if the depreciation has been claimed on tax component of a capital good. So you cannot have two advantages for the same transactions. So no ITC if depreciation has been claimed. If invoice or debit note is received after. So these are the conditions under which ITC can be claimed. Where the goods or services or both are used by a registered person partly for the purpose of business and partly for other purposes, the amount of credit shall be restricted to such of the input as is attributable for the purpose of the business. So the credit is specifically meant for the business purpose. Where the goods or services or both are used by the registered person partly for effecting taxable supplies, including the zero risk supplies, or under the Integrated Goods and Services Act, and partly for effecting the exempted supplies, the amount of credit shall be restricted to such of the input tax as is attributable to the said taxable supplies, including zero tax, zero rate supply. So the taxable supply is very important, and this apportionment of credit rules needs to be followed. Now let us look into taking input tax credit in respect of inputs and capital goods sent for the job work. The principal shall, subject to such conditions and restrictions as may be prescribed, be allowed input tax credit on inputs sent to a job worker for a job work. The principal shall be entitled to the credit of input tax on the inputs even if the inputs are directly sent to the job worker for job work without being first bought on his place of business. So this is a specific provision as far as inputs and capital goods sent for the job work is concerned. Now, after understanding the apportionment process, let us look at the distribution of credit. How the distribution of credit by the input service distribution happens. There are conditions for distribution of credit. The first condition is prescribed documents must be issued to the receipt of credits containing the prescribed details. Amount of credit distributed must not exceed amount available to the distribution, and credit of tax paid on the input services attributed to a recipient of credit shall be distributed to that recipient. Some more provisions of distribution: credit of tax paid on input service attributed to all or more than one recipient of credit shall be distributed only amongst such or all recipients to whom the input service is attributable, and such distribution shall be prorate on the basis which is mentioned in the provision. Turnover in a state of such recipient during the relevant period to the aggregate of the turnover of all such recipients to whom such input service is attributable and which are operational in the current year during the said relevant period. So these are the provisions as far as the distribution of credit by input service distributor is concerned. One more provision is that if some or all the recipients of the credit do not have any turnover in their states in the financial year preceding the year during which the credit is to be distributed, the last quarter for which details of such turnovers of all the recipients are available previous to the month during which the credit is to be distributed. So friends, with this we cover unit 3, also a very important unit as far as the GST is concerned, and we'll move on to the next unit. Thank you.